Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, disappearing for long periods of time before meeting a little probe known as Friendship One.
And why does he say that, folks? It's because this week we are going to rank the top 47 recurring characters in Star Trek.
Yeah, Cam, look, why 47? It's kind of an inside joke within Star Trek, especially the Next Generation writers' room. I think they just inserted that number as much as they could because, I don't know, Joe Manosky, one of the all-time freelancers there, he thought it was a cool number. So that's why we've decided on 47. The other arbitrary reason why is, unlike the main characters, I think we did 67 of them in our rankings a couple weeks ago, Cam.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's necessarily that number of recurring characters that are as juicy for us to dig into. My rule when I'm going through this, doing this kind of ranking here, is, you know what, if I don't remember your name, or if, you know, say Cam has to describe this individual in great detail for me to remember anything, I don't know if I'm going for you. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is.
Right, and it's a good thing this isn't a Star Wars podcast where we have the top 1,138 characters.
I appreciate that reference as well, Cam. Mm. So maybe some ground rules here. For you, before we get into it, what is your idea of a great recurring character?
I think it's so tough because some of the ones we're going to tackle on this ranking are almost regular players on the show, right? Like, they may not be in every episode, but they loom large over sort of the legacy of their show, or if it's an ongoing show, they're a consistent presence. Other ones had like three or four episodes. And so it is, to me, I think, kind of like what you said, where I'm excited when they show up, but I also feel like they contribute actual value to the overall story of what their show is. So when I walk away, you know, I could get on a podcast and talk for 5 or 10 minutes about their character and not be like, so, they had a cool haircut in that episode or something along those lines.
Wait, did fallen co-host Benjamin Yong pitch that idea to you about haircuts?
That's right. That's going to be our spinoff show.
There you go. Another inside joke. Go back to, I guess, episodes 1 through 12 of Subspace Transmissions. If what are we on, Cam? Like 350 at this point?
I think it's something like that. Yeah, yeah.
Well, we're still mocking our short-lived co-host on this show. But for me, though, if I see their names pop up in the main credits, like and I'm delighted, that to me is a great recurring character. And what makes for the most magnificent ones, in my opinion, though, is if they have like a certain arc to them. Like, I can see the beginning, middle, end of the character by the time, you know, we end up at the, you know, final moments of their journey. That's the ultimate. We're not going to get there with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
There are still a lot of great recurring characters that have amazing moments, or maybe they just kind of have this spark within their personality. I give a lot of credit for the actor because obviously the writers like writing for them. And that's why they keep bringing them back, even if it's kind of a bit player sort of job.
Sure. And we're not going to be tackling every recurring character. I know there's ones like, as you referenced in a text to me, like Sukal and Osira from Season 3 Discovery aren't going to be in consideration right now. We've kind of picked...
How dare you?
We've kind of picked the really good ones, I think, and maybe some who are have a little bit of comedy value, but at least had a, you know, major contribution on the show.
Cam, can I just ask you a legit question, though? Like, as we're going through this, like, do you feel that I don't want to spoil anything, but do you feel that we can count people like, say, William T. Riker as a recurring character?
Well,
like, in my opinion is no.
Yeah.
Like, he's already in the main cast. So does that mean that, say, one Chief O'Brien does not get to count as one of the greatest recurring characters as well?
I don't think so, because I think that character's legacy is so tied to DS9.
So if the character appeared in our rankings a few weeks ago for best, you know, main characters, then I think we can agree that they don't get to be in this list as well, too, right?
That's right. That doesn't explain Sukal, though, Tyler.
Okay, okay. Well, sorry. Stop stomping on my love for Sukal, the radioactive man boy from the future.
Weirdly, but, we actually put the swamp monster on the list, but not Sukal.
Okay. Wait, swamp monster? The thing from was, Shades of Grey?
No, no, the swamp monster that Sukal was fighting.
Oh, God. Okay, thank you. And maybe one other note. Even though I think Hugh Culber started as a recurring character, he's in the main credits. We ranked him as a main character a few weeks ago. Somebody like that's not going to make our list either, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, and the other thing we should note. Okay, we are going to go from worst to best. So we'll start at 47 and go down there. Cam, I think this could create a lot of controversy because there could be a lot of great characters that might be getting squeezed out of the list because you and I, we're going to go back and forth. We're going to draft. We can debate. So in that event, I think you and I should each have two vetoes mm-hmm. and we'll use those vetoes at the end to review the list. And then we can decide, you know what, maybe this person should be here and that person should be there.
Right.
So Cam, you picked first when it came to best main characters in Star Trek a couple weeks ago. You got an extra pick out of that. So now I'm going to pull that card. I get to go first for best recurring characters. And I'm going to cheat a little bit. Sorry to do it. I'm being honest here. But at number 47, I am going with Lursa and Bator. Because, Cam, I cannot separate them. If you showed me a picture of Lursa, a picture of Bator, it'd be a 50-50 split on, like, if I'm guessing it right. What about you?
Yeah, I don't disagree with having them near the bottom. That makes a lot of sense. They fulfill their purpose on the show, but they just never seem to care that much about developing them as characters, especially giving them individual characteristics, really.
But I have to give them props, though, in that they are distinct enough that we all recognize who they are. They make the leap from TNG to Deep Space Nine, and that Deep Space Nine appearance, it also propels them into Star Trek Generations. They are literally, like, film villains at this point. Like, I think they deserve their due, but I still, I can't separate them as, like, you know, like, 47, 46. Cam, if I put Lursa 47, would you have felt compelled to put Bator at 46 for your first pick?
Yeah. 100%, yes.
Yeah, I so think that's why I'm cheating here.
Yeah, you have to keep them as a single entity because they didn't write them as defining characteristics individually, so they only work as a duo.
I have no defining individual characteristics for them. Do you?
Not off the top of my head. Maybe if I sat down and actually watched their episodes immediately when it was over, I could say, yes, Lursa had this kind of attitude, but I also have trouble in my head differentiating between the two, just even what they look like.
But they are very memorable as a pair, and look, I think they're fun villains. I just remember when I went and saw Star Trek Generations in theaters, look, you know, we live in Canada, and whenever, like, movies would come out that would have Canadian stars in it, the marketing would say, like, starring Canadian actress so-and-so or Canadian actor so-and-so. And I remember, like, I think it's Barbara March, who I think plays Bator. I think she's Canadian. Mm-hmm. And the Star Trek Generations movie poster said, starring Barbara March as Bator. I'm just like, really? You couldn't go with William Shatner?
I actually saw her at the first Star Trek con I ever went to.
How was that?
It was good. Yeah, she gave a good panel. She was, I think, maybe the first speaker I ever saw at a Star Trek con, because I think they had her open the day.
Well, I'm sure she'd be pleased to find out she's at the bottom of my list. But Cam, what is number 46 for you?
Baryle. It has to be Baryle, because, look, we can't let Baryle sneak into the higher ranks, but I feel like we owe it to the podcast and to the legacy of this character to make the list. So I'm putting him, which would have been my bottom spot. He would have been 47 if I'd picked first, but I think we need representation for Baryle, one of Kira's great loves, a character who I think served a role on the show, which was the spiritual opposite of a Kai Winn. And I think when Baryle faded away, we all felt that loss.
So much so that you devoted your time and energy to a rap video dedicated to Vedic Baryle, which, Cam, I mentioned to all the listeners on the podcast a few weeks ago that my girlfriend, who's making her way through Deep Space Nine as we speak, she was actually a fan of Baryle, and I showed her your music video. We need to get another link. I want to share it as much as we can, but she was impressed with your rapping skills, sir.
It would make her weep to know how much time that took to make.
Weep in excitement or sadness?
All sadness, all the time.
Okay. Next up on my list, I'm going to go with an Enterprise character here. One Daniels, played by one Matthew Winston. This is one of those characters that I shouldn't like. It's kind of a cipher. It's somebody who's there in the background as an ensign. We find out that he is part of, you know, this sort of temporal Cold War. But he keeps popping up enough and enough that, like, I get the idea that, like, Matt Winston's actually kind of a charismatic actor. Kim, I don't know about his personality, though. And that's one of the issues. Kind of, I go back to the Lursa Bator thing. I think Bryle has more distinctive, you know, individual traits than, say, Daniels does. But Daniel, he kind of pops on screen when he's there.
Yeah, he's one of those actors that I actually feel sorry for in that he's really good in the role. He has a lot of charisma, but he's attached to the temporal Cold War arc, which went nowhere. And so that's entirely what we base our thoughts on this character around is, well, he serviced an arc that no one liked.
What do you think about his ending? Because as I mentioned at the top there, like, I like characters that have a beginning, middle, and end, like a clear arc. I don't know if they did right by him with regards to how he ended his journey.
Yeah, no, they didn't really. And I mean, to be fair, they didn't do a lot of things right in paying off the temporal Cold War arc. It's just that he was the most charismatic element of that whole arc. And it was a bummer because I think different series, different time, Daniels could have been a really cool character.
Yeah. All right, sir, who is number 44 on our list?
I'm going to put a Washington at number 44. And I think, in my mind, this is a character with plenty of movement, potentially. Right now, it feels like, often she gets paired up with Detmer on the show. I feel like Detmer, they're writing more for her to do. So I haven't, I'm not ticking her off yet. But I feel like a Washington, we've gotten bits and pieces, her, what was it, growing up in like a, not Hutterite colony. What was it? What did they say?
I would love it if she grew up in a Hutterite colony. For those that don't live in Canada or in like the prairie provinces, the Hutterites are like our equivalent of the Amish. She lived in a Luddite colony.
Thank you. Luddites, thank you.
Yeah. Clearly, if you've listened to our show before, it is produced by Luddites. That's all I will say.
So we've gotten bits and pieces of that character's personality, some really cool action, but I'm still waiting for that kind of breakthrough story that actually really solidifies her, because I definitely think she has what it takes to be a really great character.
Yeah, it's interesting in that if you asked me a year ago, I would have ranked Washington higher than Detmer, but I think they gave Detmer a lot more to do in season 3 of Discovery, so I'm okay with presumably maybe Detmer overtaking a Washington in our rankings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Cam, I'm going to cheat once again. I'm a cheater. What can I say? Not in that way, but
yeah.
But number 43, I'm going to go with Laris and Juban. These are Picard's helpers in his vineyard in Star Trek Picard. Cam, do you remember like the first like 3 episodes? Every single review we did, we're like, we love these Romulan helpers. Like, they are the best part of the show right now. All I want is for them to join La Serena and like somehow, some reason, it bums me out that those two are stuck at the vineyard just tending to the grounds at this point. But it maybe speaks to the dearth of really engaging lower tier characters on Picard. But the fact is, I want to see more of them. And I think that actually speaks volumes to them. And that's why I still think that they deserve to be ranked where they are at this point.
I think Laris in particular, the Romulan Helen Mirren. I think, honestly, you could have made her a regular on the show and bumped off a couple of the others, because I think was really fantastic. And it was genuinely a bummer when they just flew away from Earth and left her behind with nary a, pop-in appearance in the episodes to come.
They have to bring them back, or at least like a view screen appearance in season 2, right? The writers must understand this.
I would hope so, because she had this background with the Tal Shiar. She could do cool things. I don't know. That seems like a character that'd be a lot more cool to have around the ship than, I don't know, like some of the other ones that they wrote into the show. Like, why is Narek a ongoing main cast character, but like Laris, who's a badass, is like written out in episode 3?
I don't get it. So the only thing that I'll hold against them for my ranking, though, is they don't quite have that arc. And that's what I'm going for with a lot of these characters. We'll get better arcs as we move, you know, deeper into the list. But that's the one point against them at this juncture here.
Right, right. Okay, so for my next one, for number 42, I'm going to put Dolem here, the big bad of the Enterprise Season 3 Zindi War arc. He's the reptilian Zindi. He's pretty awesome looking. Not a lot of a particularly deep personality, but if you want a big bad, I mean, we saw Osira in Season 3 Discovery, and I think that's a character that was kind of that, you know, a little one-dimensional, more of a look, you know, in terms of the visual style of the character than an actual personality. And I feel like that's the case with Dolem. I just think he has more impact. I think this character, you really feel something at the end when Archer's facing off with him in the big zero-hour finale.
There's nothing worse than just those kind of thug characters. And I think actually Dolem has like more layers to him than that. He actually like is engaging to watch underneath all that makeup. I think this character works for what he's there to do.
Yeah, yeah, he totally does. And I met his, it was played by Scott McDonald, right?
So I don't want to say that 100% because I get the sense Scott McDonald's played so many other characters. Is it possible he did a different Season 3 Zindi character, or was it in fact Dolem?
It was Dolem. If he does play other Trek characters, he did play Dolem, because I got an autographed photo of Dolem by him, and he was very nice when I met him. So that's why he's making my list, damn it.
Yeah, well, just for those that may not remember, I think Scott McDonald's probably most iconic character, even though it wasn't recurring, is probably Tosk from, or was it, what was the second episode of Deep Space Nine, Cam?
Are you talking about the alien that was the prey or the hunter?
Yeah. Yeah, the prey.
The prey was Tosk, yeah.
The Tosk, yes. So there we go. Is there not, oh, you know what? I was thinking like I was making a Star Wars reference, but that's Tusken Raider, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay, I'm Tosken Raider. So there you go. Under the Tosken sun.
Diane Lane romantic comedy starring Dolem. I'm down for it.
I can't wait until we get our vaccinations and we can go to theaters again and see reruns of Under the Tuscan Sun.
I'm down.
All right. So, Cam, you know, look, you had a Washkin, on 44. I guess it's only fair for 41. I got to put Detmer there. She's enough of a memorable character. I like seeing her on screen. They gave her an arc on Season 3 of Discovery. I don't necessarily think that where they left her off was great, in that I guess the cure, Cam, to PTSD is amping up stress levels on people. Is that the lesson from that episode?
It seems to be. Detmer is one of those characters when she was introduced in the show, you know, she's obviously on the Shenzo. She gets injured and she's giving Burnham the stare down. You're like, okay, this is a character that's going to contribute a lot. And then they just kind of gave her nothing to do through the rest of Season 1. We finally gotten to see more development from this character. So kind of like a Washington, it's one who could move up and down depending on where this character goes in the future. But she's definitely done more. It's just that what they've given her to do is good character bits with very questionable payoff.
I'll say this. When we were in Vegas a couple years ago for the Star Trek convention, I got to do that trivia contest. I won the trivia contest. So I'm just going to pat myself on the back, going to a Star Trek, the biggest Star Trek convention in the world, and winning the trivia contest. And the actresses that played Awashikin and Detmer, they were there on stage with me, congratulating me, patting me on the back, literally. Those two are just such, you know, charismatic souls. It was great to see that kind of realized on screen. I think they're fun to watch. I want Discovery to give them more juicy material going into Season 4 as well.
Right. And I think speaking of juicy material, let's go to my number 40. That's Alexander Rozhenko.
fair ranking. Not too far off of where I would have put him.
Yeah. The reason he's not at the bottom is that I actually...
Oh, wow.
I think he actually gives us some interesting things with Worf, because Worf on TNG is often completely, you know, played as either a doofus or getting beaten up by aliens. You do get some good Klingon mythology episodes with him, but I think the one thing with Alexander was we actually get to see a facet of Worf we didn't get to see explored on DS9. So I can look at that character with a certain amount of, okay, you paid off well enough.
Okay. Look, I will point to this. This character has an arc, and also he's played by like 5 different actors throughout the course of the series. I wonder, is he going to be played by Tony Todd by the time we get to him in Star Trek Picard?
We can only hope.
I would hope so. But
do you remember there was those rumors about Tony Todd being in talks for, I think, Star Trek Discovery?
Yes. The implication was that he was going to play Lorca. And it's a little weird, though, because didn't Tony Todd say that he was playing an alien captain?
That's what I'm thinking. Was it Captain Alexander Rozhenko?
Sent back in time to the Discovery era?
That's right.
Okay. Yes, Cam, it was Captain Alexander Rozhenko for the Mirror Universe.
Had they made that the show, how angry are fans?
I would have liked it just for how, like, batshit crazy it was. Oh, just being honest. Yeah.
Totally.
Okay. So, Cam, going up to... Okay, if we're talking about child characters in Star Trek, I think we gotta go with Naomi Wildman at this point. And mostly because I think she actually gave Neelix some interesting storylines here. You know, remember when he was dealing with, like, issues of his own spirituality and mortality, and he kind of took that out on, you know, the kid that he was babysitting? We got some fun episodes, The Haunting of Deck 12, for example. And I actually like the idea of what is it like for the only child to grow up on the USS Voyager. I think as far as child characters go, she didn't fall into the trap that, you know, they laid for, say, Wesley Crusher, for example. So we gotta have Naomi Wildman at some point. I'll put her here firmly at number 39.
I also really liked her relationship with Seven of Nine. I think, like, you know, I said Alexander gave us things with Worf that we may not have gotten otherwise. I think Naomi was the course correction on Alexander, and that she was not anywhere near as annoying as Alexander could be, but she got really good stuff out of both Seven of Nine and Neelix. So, plus, she opened the door to Treavis and Flotter, so we owe her something for that.
And just like Flotter, my heart has been flooding ever since.
That's right. Okay, so for my number 38, I've got Dr. Soong. I think Dr. Soong is a character, I almost admire him more as a concept than a character, because he often...
Thank you.
I don't know that you could say, like, Dr. Soong is a truly layered character, but I like what Brent Spiner's doing with him. I think the episodes he factors into and the relationship he has with Data and Lore is really interesting. There's a legacy to this character I find fascinating. He's one that I often wonder, do I like Dr. Soong or do I like the idea of Dr. Soong? Well, I'm putting him at number 38, so I guess I like him in some way or other.
Well, here's the deal. It is fascinating that we actually only ever saw the character in the flesh once in all of Star Trek. That was in, I believe, Brothers. And otherwise, it's been like in dream sequences, in holographic, you know, projections, or else just hearing about him and how he literally built a sex bot. You know, talking about the episode Inheritance, where we meet Data's quote-unquote mother, who has, like, as they explained, like, you know, flesh and ventricles and all that, which is interesting to hear about. So I feel we get a sense of who this character is. He's kind of creepy, especially thinking about how he built Data in the image of his son Alden Soong, Dr. Alden Soong, and made him anatomically correct as well.
Yes. You're still not weirding me out yet. What's the problem
okay,
here?
Okay, yeah. Well, no, I don't know why he's not number 4 on your list, but there you go.
That'll be a whole other list.
Okay. So, Kim, I'm realizing I'm looking through, like, my, you know, kind of projected list here. I think I might have to, like, kind of really dig into it, get into the nitty-gritty here. I'm going to jump up a couple spaces, and for 37, I didn't want to have this character at this point, but I'm going to go with one, Michael Eddington. This is a character who was Blandy McBlanderson for about like 2.5 seasons. And then they give this character an arc in which he kind of is realized to be not this uptight, by the rules sort of Starfleet security officer giving Odo a hard time. This man had layers. He was in the Maquis. He somehow turned into Sisko's greatest nemesis within the course of about like 2 episodes, which, and I couldn't believe that actually realistically, like credibly made him go toe to toe with Sisko. I think it helped a lot that they had that holographic, you know, kind of view screen that they're using for like 2 or 3 episodes. I'm putting Michael Eddington here at 37.
Yeah, he's a character. I remember the first time going through the series, he was very much positioned as, you know, the character that would bump up against like Odo, for example. And I was like, okay, like, let's just get rid of him. Because obviously Odo's the, you know, one of the stars on the show. You're not going to be keeping Eddington over Odo for security. So whatever, who cares? Like, he doesn't have a unique gimmick to him. He's just a Starfleet dude. Little did I realize going forward, he would become, as you said, one of the most compelling adversaries for Sisko.
Where does he rank there compared with, say, I don't know, Dukat?
Well, he's not on top of Dukat for the greatest nemesis.
Are you sure? Do you want to take that back?
I don't think so. I think I can stick with Dukat being the ultimate.
Okay, well, listeners, we have this on tape. Cam is officially saying that Michael Eddington is not as good as Dukat.
That's right. That's right. But, you know, Eddington's a character. Had they stretched him out a few other seasons with recurring spots, I think he would be remembered with even more fanfare than he is.
I think they, it kind of bugs me that they did not bring him back. There must have been like a great, you know, kind of like prison escape episode that they could have done with him or something, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Okay. Well, Cam, 36 for you, sir.
Okay, I think I'm going to do Cornwell from Discovery.
Yes. Yes, Cam, that was actually my 36 as well. This is the first time that your list has matched mine. So excellent, sir.
Yeah, I think Cornwell as a character, not necessarily written the most consistently, which is something I feel like we could say for almost every single Star Trek Discovery character. But I thought that there was a strength to that character, and it was a Star Trek Admiral that was actually really cool. And we have so few of those. It's something that we continue to struggle with. I mean, Picard didn't really introduce one that I really like, other than Picard himself.
Well, actually, I'm not even sure I liked Admiral Picard that he was cool.
He was kind of a jerk too, actually, come to think of it. Whereas like Cornwell was someone, I liked seeing her mix it up with the crew. She had great chemistry with them. I liked seeing her opposite the captains Pike and Lorca. Again, it was a very, I think, inconsistently plotted character, but in terms of character writing, she was very strong.
Why did she have to die?
Well, it's one of those deaths that I don't kind of care because they left that timeline behind anyway. So it's like, okay, well, it's not like they just wrote the character out and then continued on down that timeline where I would have been like, oh, well, that really sucks not having Cornwell around. You know, when we're losing her, Laurel, Ash Tyler, several all in one, I'm like, okay, her death was at least sort of memorable.
But from a storytelling perspective, it was one of those deaths that didn't make sense, right?
Yeah.
It seemed like a cheap death in order to garner a reaction from the audiences.
Yeah, I mean, you always kind of want that tearful death moment, it seems, in a lot of serialized television. And they went for it there. But it was, that classic case of I think they wanted people to think through those scenes emotionally. But a lot of people couldn't overcome the intellectual hurdle of, why is this character locking themselves in the room with a bomb?
Well, yes, fair enough. speaking of characters, admirals, and bombs, I'm going to follow that up with one Admiral Forrest here. this is a character who had an arc in that, again, he was kind of Blandy McBlanderson, kind of like Michael Eddington. But when he croaked, at spoiler alert for a show that ended, you know, 15 years ago, I felt something. And it actually served a purpose in that it gave, you know, motivation to one Captain Archer throughout that Vulcan, that season 4 Vulcan arc that I really, really adored. And it was great. Just amazing to see him come back as one Captain Forrest in the Mirror Universe arc, where he was just, I'm sure Vaughn Armstrong, the actor who played Admiral Forrest, was just loving his Mirror Universe version, though. This turned out to be actually like a pretty fun character that I dug by the end. I would have no problem if they kept bringing him back in some weird manner, but, you know, he had a full arc. I dig it.
Yeah, I always kind of felt bad for Vaughn Armstrong in that most of his performances were, like, Skyped in. But it was cool when he got things to do, like that mirror arc, or even in First Flight, the prequel episode, Broken Bow, some of the later episodes, you know, like, you would get moments with him, but you're right. Like, he belongs, I think, a little lower down on the list, but very memorable. I think, honestly, I'm going to follow him up with another Admiral.
Oh, wow.
I think so.
Okay.
I think...
okay, I can guess who you're going to put there. We'll see if my veto power will strike you down towards the end, but go on.
Okay, I'm going to go with Admiral Ross, I think.
Cam, what is this man's most distinctive individual personality trait?
I don't know.
Cam, can I ask you to reconsider, like, Admiral Ross? Like, it's just, the problem is, like, Deep Space Nine, I don't know why they did not have Admiral Nechayev as a recurring character. Like, I think it just made so much more sense. They had her in, I think, in, like, one or two episodes. It bummed me out they did not bring her back. She had so much more personality than Admiral Ross. I would urge you, if you're going to do an Admiral, why not Admiral Nechayev?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Why not Admiral Nechayev?
I think Ross is kind of a dud.
Okay, well, here's what I propose then. Why don't we strike Admiral Ross from the record? Because here's the thing. Nothing against the actor, but they didn't write, as you said, recognizable characteristics for him. He is serving a plot function. I think he serves the plot function well enough, but you're right. Like, in terms of like being a memorable character, a character that people get excited for when they turn on an episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, I don't think that Ross... is one who brings people to life. As nice as the actor was, as much as I appreciated him at conventions, as much as I appreciate his overall plot function, as a character, he leaves a little bit to be desired. That's on the writers, not on the actor. So why don't we slot in Nechayev then as an actor?
Okay. Okay. I'll just point this out. His name changed throughout the course of Deep Space Nine. If you watch the episode in which... I forget which one where... Sisko is officially made like adjunct to Admiral Ross, but there's like a diploma in the background of Ross's office, and his name is Clifford Ross, and they ended up changing his name in reference and dialogue to like William Ross or Bill. And it's just weird that they cared so little about this character that they could not even keep his name consistent.
Was he named after Cliff Bull originally, maybe?
I know that there was a reference to Cliff Bull, who's a producer on the series, in which on TNG, they're speaking of the planet where the Bullions come from, and they refer to the Cliffs of Bull, which I thought was funny. But I don't believe that Admiral Ross was a direct reference to Cliff Bull. I could be mistaken, though.
Okay. Well, Nechayev, it's like you said, that is a character with fire, with personality. I like that she was also complicated. There was episodes where you're like, I can't stand Nechayev. And then you would suddenly pivot and have an episode where she was on the captain's side because, you know, she disagreed with the captain one episode, but she agreed with them in another one. And I like that there was that versatility to that character. It's something we talked about when we talk about admirals. So often they're there to just poo-poo the captain. I like that Nechayev had dimension and was a character that basically thought on their own.
Like, she is, like, pretty solid. And like, Cam, what about your story in Vegas where you got that amazing encounter with the actress?
Yeah, where she was actually in costume as Nechayev, and she was actually not charging that much for autographs and photos. And so we did a whole bunch of photos. She gave me, an autograph. It was great.
I think, didn't you pay like $10 and like it was like you took a selfie with her in uniform?
I think it was 20. I think it was 20 and most people were charging 30. I think that's okay. The way it worked. Yeah.
I just remember like you told me about it. I was like, oh, wow, I'm going to go to her table in the vendor's room the next day, and she was gone by I think this Sunday, which was like a total bummer.
Yeah. Very nice lady. I recommend anyone who goes to a Star Trek con go get a photo with her.
Okay, Cam, I'm looking at my list here. I really realize I gotta start killing my darlings at this point. I'm gonna skip over a couple people, and at 33, I'm gonna put Jet Reno from Star Trek Discovery. This is somebody who has personality. Just give me a character with distinct personality. The other amazing thing is, like, Cam, have we ever encountered a single character in Star Trek with, like, this sort of, like, stone face, deadpan drawl to her? Like, Star Trek is always about, like, the Shakespearean, like, enunciation. I love Jet Reno, and I think Tig Notaro has just done, like, an exceptional role bringing this character to life. I hope maybe in season 5 of Discovery we can hope to see more appearances. I think the pandemic has kind of closed off her appearances in season 4. From my understanding, she's only going to be in, like, one episode. That, to me, is a real bummer. The only thing, though, is, like, I don't know if she's had an arc, but she's given us enough of her personality, talking about marrying her wife and, like, kind of the advice that she was giving to Stamets when he was going through that separation with Culber. I think this is a really great character.
Yeah, she really is. And I love when Star Trek writes characters who don't sound like everyone else. And I think that's something Discovery's actually done very well. And Jet Reno, man, you wish that Tig Notaro was down for, like, being a regular cast member as opposed to recurring, because I think she could add so much. But I'm willing to accept her as a recurring if it means we get her on Star Trek. That's all that matters to me.
I'll take what I can. Maybe she can pull an Admiral Forrest and view screen in a couple appearances in season 4 as well.
We can only hope.
Okay.
I think I'm going to now put a character that we've made some jokes about, but I think when you look at his journey, there's actually enough there to justify his placement here, and that's Icheb. And I know that, like, Icheb's a character we've definitely taken some shots at over the years. And yet we were not happy with Icheb's fate on Star Trek Picard. So that tells me that that character actually did mean something to us, and that his journey through Voyager and relationship to Seven actually did hit some notes that were, I think, emotionally fulfilling and added something to Seven and to Icheb by extension. So that's a character that I remember there was a couple episodes of Voyager. I was like, oh, this is pretty dippy stuff. But then you had, like, the one where his parents were going to sacrifice him back to the Borg. Your heart went out to that character. So I think when they gave him good emotional stories, Icheb did deliver.
Cam, I'm not going to fault you for this. I actually had him a little higher up on my list here. So and this is a character who had an arc. It ended in complete and utter misery. But I appreciate what he brought to the table. And I think, you know, going back and watching a lot of these episodes, you know, 20 years later, I really do appreciate, like, what Icheb was bringing to Seven's journey as well. So I can't fault you for this. Cam, speaking of people with familial relations, I think we got to go with one Kern. This is Worf's biological brother, of course. Sorry, Paul Sorvino. You're not a recurring character, otherwise you would be in Kern's spot. But this is a character who had an arc in which he comes from this disgraced family because of Worf's actions, and he ends up getting his entire memory erased and sent to this other family, not knowing who he was because of, yet again, the disgrace that Worf brought upon the House of Moog. I think Kern is a great character. I hope that they can somehow redeem what happened to him moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Todd, powerhouse actor, he is going to deliver every time out. I think I'm going to follow Kern with Janice Rand from the original series.
Nice.
Janice Rand's a character I think could have delivered so much more, but the show gave her very inconsistent material where she'd get really great scenes in Balance of Terror, and then in another scene was, like, silently just coming in and handing a communique to Kirk. So, you know, I like what she does when she's there and being written well, but only 8 episodes, and of that 8, it's only, like, maybe 5 memorable appearances.
Okay, well, if we're hitting the getting from the 30s into the 29s, I'm looking at my list here. Why not, Cam? Why not go with Zeki here? This is Grand Nagus Zek. I don't know if he so much had an arc, but he kind of did, in that he eventually came around on the whole idea of, you know, women's suffrage, and it was influenced by a character who I think might be even more interesting further up on the list, but I'm going to go with Grand Nagus Zek. Whenever I saw Walshawn's name come up in the, credits for guest stars, I was delighted to see what Zek had up next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really fun character. Could have been annoying. It's the type of character where the actor is making very specific choices and they could have been a nightmare, but he's actually quite a compelling character.
Well, there's a reason he's not in the main credits. That's all I will say.
Yeah, a little goes a long way with Zek, but he's kind of, he's that kind of the pepper. You just want like a little pinch of it, but he's perfect when he's there. what a weird analogy. Anyways.
It's perfect.
Yeah, perfect. So I think for number 28, I'm going to put Degra. Degra's from the season 3 Enterprise arc, for those that don't remember. He's the one that had helped design the Zindi weapon that would have terrible ramifications for the galaxy. I love this character. He's not necessarily one that I think people think of as a cool character or necessarily an iconic visual, but the journey this character goes on, the soul searching that this character goes through, is really quite haunting. And I love that we get this journey on season 3, which is often very action-packed. And I love that we get a deep character journey with this character.
Degra, great choice. I'm going to go as my next pick, though, with Loxana Troi. I know your mileage may vary, but I still think she brings a lot of great things out of Deanna Troi. I still think that she's iconic enough that how can we leave her off of the list of greatest recurring characters?
Yeah, good call, good call. I think I'm going to follow up with another mother character, and that's at number 26. I'm going to put Laurel from Star Trek Discovery. I love Mary Chifo as this character. But we have to also acknowledge this character was all over the place in season 1 Discovery.
We never figured out what her intentions were throughout this.
Like, I remember thinking through season 1 Discovery, Laurel has the makings of like a Q or a Guinan or a recurring character that is going to be remembered as an icon. And that was the one bummer, I think, when Discovery went into the future. That was the only character I think I was legitimately bummed to leave behind, because I felt like Laurel had so much more character material to go into. So hopefully we get it in some way, shape, or form on Strange New Worlds.
Yeah.
But I love Laurel.
Well, I'll follow that up with another somewhat antagonistic character, but somebody with shades of gray, which is the female changeling, in which this is somebody who had an arc, and she was there kind of like tempting Odo to a certain degree. She did some very bad things, but she also guided Odo, especially with whatever it is that is kind of beyond sexuality when it comes to the changelings. And she had an arc. She had the Section 31 disease and was arrested and sent to prison by the end of this series. I'm just a lot of props to Salome Jens. I don't know how many people could have pulled off what was being asked of that character there.
Very true. Tough balancing act, because the female changeling is a very unlikable and often kind of unpleasant character. And I think it's a real credit to the actress that she makes her compelling. Like, you legitimately are fascinated by where that character is going. Okay, so I think jumping off of the female changeling, I want to work in Sela. And I think Sela is a character that we found kind of frustrating in that they didn't write her out of the show, really.
They just stopped writing her.
But I think Denise Crosby has like a fierceness, and I like the backstory to this character. I think it was a very imaginative way to work Denise Crosby back onto the show. I mean, they did it twice. Both times when they wanted Denise Crosby back, they really had to, you know, basically kind of bend over backwards creatively to figure out a solution. And I think both times the solutions were really strong. And I think that Sela is a villain that deserved a better outcome. But I think the material she has, the buildup, the scene she shares with various cast members is really strong.
So my next pick, I feel a little bit like torn about this, but I'm going to put Christine Chappell here only because I think Janice Rand is a better character. And if I'm thinking about like the recurring characters from TOS, there aren't that many that I think would deserve to be on this list. I think it's only like Janice Rand and Christine Chappell, but I need to have Christine Chappell on this list. Just think about like, she had a personality. We know what motivated her. We knew that she was super competent at her job. They brought her back for the movies. This is a character who's memorable. I'd be ashamed if we did not include her on our list.
Plus, the unrequited romance with Spock led to some actually compelling material. And it also helped explore Spock himself. Like, Leonard Nimoy, I think, paired very well with Majel Barrett. And there was something kind of sad and melancholy about that lack of romance between the two. So I think this is a good placement for her. Very interesting character.
Why didn't they bring her back for the Kelvinverse, man?
Well, yeah. Yeah, no kidding. They made a cheap joke at her expense, and you're like, nice. Okay. So I think I'm going to follow Chapel up with, I think Ishka probably belongs here.
Yeah. Nice, nice.
Like, Ishka's a character, I could totally make an argument to rank her higher, but I think when you look at the ones still left on the board, it's very tough to justify pushing her further and further up. I think Ishka's a character, again, kind of a tough balancing act. People didn't care for a lot of those Ferengi episodes a lot, but I think there was something very moving about a character who's lived, you know, according to society's rule for so long in Ferenginar, and decides, no, I'm going to pursue something else for my own happiness, and ends up having a major effect on, you know, her society at large. So, very compelling character.
She might have changed her society more than any other individual person in Star Trek. You could maybe make the argument for, say, Dukat and what became of, you know, Cardassia as a result of him. But I don't know, like, Ishka's up there. She is, like, a profound character. I loved what she brought out of Quark. I cannot fault you for this. I'm going to follow that up with another Deep Space Nine character, who is Vic Fontaine. When this character first arrived halfway through season 6 of Deep Space Nine, it's like, okay, that was a great one-off, never need to see him again. And they kept bringing him back. He was kind of the counselor. He was the Guinan of Deep Space Nine. I think that it's just insane that they could, you know, mine so much amazing stuff out of him. Think about an episode like His Way, and then go to It's Only a Paper Moon. This character, like, was just exceptional, like, what he was able to bring out of the other characters here.
Yeah, he really was. I remember thinking, watching that episode where he debuted, being like, oh dear, this is not a great idea. And then it turned out to be the greatest idea ever.
Okay, Cam, so I'm just going to remind you, we are in the top 20 here, so
I know
we might have to be kind of vicious, although we do have, between the two of us, four vetoes, so I'm just saying, let's try to, cut the fat if we must.
I know, it's so difficult. I'm looking at ones I think I want to cut. I think what I'm going to do then is put at number 20, Lon Suter from Voyager.
Okay.
Only had a couple appearances, but boy, did Brad Dourif make them work, because you had that episode Meld with Tuvok, where one of the best Tuvok episodes, if not the best, and then you have Basics with Lon Suter helping take back the ship, which is so awesome and a great redemption arc for this very complicated character.
Can't fault you for that. He is one of my favorite recurring characters from Voyager, even though I made that reference to Joe Carey earlier. Because of that, I don't know if Joe Carey's going to make it in the top 20. But somebody who is, somebody I cannot deny it, is going to be one. It'll be Admiral or Ambassador Soval here. This is a character who has an arc, who, when I first started watching him, episode 1 of Star Trek Enterprise, hated his guts, could not stand him. I came to love this character in the way that I guess he kind of had to admit that he loved humanity as well. We get to see his journey through, like, him, you know, enduring torture under the hands of Shran. And we see him and Jonathan actually form, like, a bond. I think this is great, especially for a guy who is known as Admiral Pointy in the first episode.
Yeah, Saval, again, another character that when he first started, I was like, well, here's a thoroughly unlikable character. And by the end, he's so compelling and fascinating. And I love his, again, he has an arc. That's something I appreciate. And it's something that some of the Berman era Star Trek shows didn't do with their Vulcan characters. So, great pick.
Yes, sir.
Okay, for number 18, I think I'm going to put Leeta.
Good.
Yeah, I think Leeta's a character, again, not introduced with great fanfare, but turns into such a complex character. And I think the romance with Rom is really touching, and just how much of a powerful role she takes, you know, during the Dominion arc and just going forward. Like, I like that it's a character that could have been played in a very 90s way, but actually has a lot of backbone and a lot of strength.
You know, speaking of backbone, strength, and, you know, maybe whipping some people into shape, I got to give it to Keiko O'Brien. She really was kind of that gravity for Miles. She has the opportunity to go on this journey from being, you know, kind of the botanist, or, you know, what was her? She wasn't a botanist. What was her actual job like on the Enterprise, sir?
Well, she was a teacher of the kids' school, but Yeah, wasn't she? I remember she worked with plants. Isn't that botany?
Okay, you know, this is why I was a liberal arts major at camp. So, yeah. But she had a journey as well, and like I think maybe a bit of a disservice in like maybe some of her most defining moments were like arguments with Miles. That brought, you know, actually like pathos to the journey of a lot of these characters here. I really dug her. She had a personality. She was like somebody who really believed in what she was doing from a vocational standpoint, both from teaching as well as botany. I really think she's one of those kind of unsung heroes here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it gave us normalcy on a Star Trek show where we got to examine just a family. And yes, some of the writing is very up and down with the Keiko Miles relationship, but I did sort of appreciate that look of an inner life, a very normal life on Star Trek. And Keiko's a huge part of that. And you know what? It is sometimes fun having a character that'll call a character on their you-know-what. And she got to do that with Miles sometimes.
On their coffee?
Exactly, Tyler. Exactly.
Okay.
So I think we're going to go from Keiko. I think Gowron. I'm going to put it number 16. There's another Klingon I think I'm saving, but Gowron, Robert O'Reilly, those eyes, what beautiful eyes. I love that this character is so complex and that I'm on his side for much of TNG. And yet I love how DS9 takes a twist to that character where suddenly I'm not so much on his side and I'm watching Worf murder him in cold blood and I'm not against it. Like, I like that this character goes on a journey.
I totally dig him. Speaking of characters that are sometimes allies, sometimes antagonistic, and their names start with G, I'm going with Giorgio, one Philippa Giorgio, specifically from the Mirror Universe. She has an arc if we follow her from the Prime Universe. And look, she's a complete sociopath when we see her in the Mirror Universe. By the end of it, or at least to the point that we get to in Star Trek Discovery, I'm with this character. I like this character. They finally figured out you need to make her arch to be enjoyable. It worked for me. She was fun. She got all the best lines. We know what her motivation was. And I want to see where her next steps take her. I just don't know if I want to actually watch it in a Section 31 spinoff. But Giorgio all the way here for number 15.
Yeah, probably the best recurring character on Discovery. And again, you've got that inconsistency going on with the writing, but boy, Michelle Yeoh delivers. Okay, I think I'm going to follow Giorgio up with Cassidy Yates.
Nice,
Yeah, Cassidy Yates, Sisko's wife, ultimately, in Deep Space Nine. Really fantastic character. And so often, I think on a show where you had a character like Sisko, who's this force of nature personality, you would pair him with someone who's more demure. And I like that Cassidy was a tough character who had her own storyline, and these two storylines just managed to merge.
Yes. It could have been such a terrible sort of job to give, you know, Ben Sisko like a compelling love interest. They hit it out of the ballpark with her, and that she felt like a real person, and I totally understood her motivations. Like, she's absolutely great. Another character, maybe I don't relate to just as much, but I think is still somebody fun to watch, and somebody who I think a lot of people could really maybe see themselves to a certain degree, and is Reg Barkley. Whenever I see, you know, Dwight Schultz's name pop up in the credits, whether it's TNG or Voyager, I was like, great, we're going to get something interesting out of this character. And he brought it every single time. I know a lot of the stuff from the Voyager arc made you feel very uncomfortable, Cam, but I don't think that diminishes anything that we saw before it.
So uncomfortable. But yeah, I'm looking forward. We've talked about doing an episode on Barkley at some point in the future. And hopefully, you know, we can make that happen once the pandemic's over and get a good guest in for that one. Because I think that could be really cool.
How do you think Barkley's faring in a pandemic?
Not great. I'm sure about as well as, well, several of us.
But, yeah, fair enough. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Boy, now we are in the real tough category where it's like, oh my God, it's all big names. Which order do you want to put them? I think for 12,
Because here's the deal, the dilemma you have to deal with. Who are you denying a top 10 spot? And yeah. You might get some pushback from me, but I want to hear it, Cam. Number 12.
I think I'm going to put DeMar at 12.
Oh, okay. I can accept it, but go on.
Yeah, I can tell you why, in that DeMar, obviously, so much of the glory of DeMar comes in, like, the final season and some of season 6. But up until then, he's kind of a non-entity, so he burns very strong at the end. You don't get a lot leading up to that, but DeMar's a character whose legacy is obviously so strong in terms of his part in the Battle for Cardassia. I love his character on DS9 when he actually gets things to do. And boy, does he do things, you know, in that final arc. But I feel like of the kind of the remaining, he has the least to do of the kind of the all-star team.
I'll be honest, I don't have him that much higher up on my list. But the next person that I'm going to, you know, share with you, it's somebody who I would have put just one slot below DeMar, if I'm being honest. Maybe I'll use my veto power. I don't know. Maybe I'll have other things to quibble about. But I'm going to put Martok. One General Martok here at number 11. This is a character, you meet him, he has like a crappy son. Next time you see him, he's in fact a changeling. Next time you see him, he has no eyeball. And next time you see him, he's kind of a wussy in command of a ship. This is somebody who has an arc. We love Martok by the end. He's drinking blood wine. Everybody realizes that's a sociopathic thing to do after 800 million people have died. Sisko pours out the blood wine. I think that's just like an interesting way to leave the character off. But ultimately, he brings Worf under his wing. He is part of House of Martok now, Worf that is, and he's joining the diplomatic corps. I really, really do appreciate what they did with Martok.
Totally. Martok is, I think, my favorite Klingon of all time. I mean,
I can't
he
blame
is
you.
So cool. Yeah, like, there's so much cool there. And his arc was fantastic as well. Okay, now I'm at the number 10 spot.
Yeah, Cam. Let me judge you harshly for who you put at number 10.
I think at number 10, and I actually feel okay about this one, I'm going to put Ro Laren at number 10. And I think it's because, again, we're dealing with the all-stars here. And Ro Laren doesn't have as much material as some of these other ones. And there's a couple episodes in there I'm like, oh, I don't know if these are great Ro Laren stories. But when she hits, she's great. And I think one of her most important qualities is she's kind of that fly in the ointment for that TNG cast of characters. And that they all kind of all get along well together for the most part. And Ro Laren is the one that really stirs things up. And she's invaluable for that. I'm very happy living in a world where Kira is a character on DS9, but I wouldn't weep if the alternate, you know, future had happened where Ro Laren was on DS9.
I'm 100% on board with what you're saying. Ro Laren actually would have been my number 10 as well. So jumping over to my number 9 is somebody who did make it onto Deep Space Nine, originally auditioned for Quark. He was the runner-up. They eventually gave him the role of pit boss on Emissary and then turned him into Rom, the father of Nog here. And I just think, like, Rom was a total jerk when the show started. Then he turned into, like, a cool, like, competent engineer, a good father, and eventually the Grand Nagus. Cam, if we're going on journeys with characters, Rom took me on a journey I never expected to go on.
No kidding. And again, that's one of the joys of DS9 is reflecting back on the first time through and me thinking that Rom was a nothing character. Little did I realize the journey I'd be going on with Rom. Okay, so for number 8, you know what? It feels kind of appropriate to have these two side by side. Let's put Nog, I think, next to Rom.
Yep.
Again, I never would have expected Rom to be a character that would mean so much to me when the show was over. And much less that I would be haunted by the season 8 journey of that character as depicted in the DS9 documentary.
Yeah, it was kind of sad in retrospect.
Yeah, but Nog, again, you think of the It's Only a Paper Moon episode and just all of the stuff to do with that last season in particular. Nog's a fantastic character.
He had a journey. And do you remember when we did the Emissary episode review and we had a guest on, Mike Hager, And I remember I couldn't wait to tell him, like, oh yeah, you know that thief there? He ends up taking over Chief O'Brien's job by the end. I remember our guest just kind of nodded his head and smiled. Somebody who was not all that familiar with Deep Space Nine. But, Cam, okay. We're going to have to use some vetoes moving forward here. I don't know how we don't include one of the top two villains in all of Deep Space Nine, which would be Kai Winn here at number 7. This is a character I know fans are just sometimes despise her. Do you know what that means? Yeah. Louise Fletcher is doing an amazing job. And to see how she is able to like kind of elicit those emotions out of people, the reason why the writers keep going back to her is because she is accomplishing exactly what she was meant to there. This is a seven season spanning antagonist for Kira, eventually for Sisko as well. Kai Winn has got to be here in the top 10. I am going with Kai Winn, number 7.
Yeah, she has serious Nurse Ratched energy on DS9.
And really? I mean, that actress?
Louise Fletcher won an Oscar for playing Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and you can't stand her in that movie. And she carries that over to Kai Winn, a character that drives you crazy, and you just can't wait for her comeuppance. You just never expected to be getting burnt up by a magical book.
Well, maybe you don't.
Okay, so for number 6, oh boy.
Cam, I'm looking at who's remaining. This is like torture, but please, sir, go on.
I think I'm going to slot Shran in at number 6.
Yes, yes.
Jeffrey Combs is, well, it's not maybe his greatest character, but it is a fantastic addition to Enterprise. Enterprise was not, I mean, I guess, you know what, we've actually ranked some of the recurring characters on Enterprise quite highly, so I was going to say that Enterprise wasn't great with them, but it actually was fairly strong. But I think Shran was a super important addition, because it's the first real Andorian character we get in Star Trek, and outside of kind of a little bit of a bumpy first episode introduction for him, that character is all on upward trajectory. Like, by the end, with the relationship established between him and Archer, great stuff. The finale appearance, not so great with the magical jewel or whatever it is, or the gem that they have to recover. But the fact that we still are tormented by the idea that Shran was going to join as a season 5 regular shows that this character was a top 10 character.
Okay, well, how can I dismiss the character that brought Shran into Enterprise? I need to mention Wayoon here. This is a character who my girlfriend saw me wearing my Deep Space Nine shirt that I guess I'd never worn in front of her before, at least before she had started watching Deep Space Nine, and she immediately described Wayoon as that vampire sort of dude there. So this is just a character who was just so... I guess Rose described it best when she said, you know, vampire. This guy just kind of sucks the energy out of the room in a way that actually makes you drawn in as a viewer here. I absolutely adore Wayoon. I think models 4 through 8 is what we got to witness.
Right, yeah. Wayoon, in a show full of great villains, Wayoon just adds to the pack. You know, you've got Winn, you've got Wayoon. We've got one still left on the list. And I mean... oh man, just what can't Jeffrey Combs do? That's the question.
Why haven't they brought him back, Kurtzman era, yet? It seems inevitable, right?
It makes no sense. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. So, you know, I think I'm going to follow that up. Now we're in the top 4 here. So at number 4, I'm going to put Guinan. Again, if Jeffrey Combs is unstoppable, so is Whoopi Goldberg. And her addition, I think, added a... this is season 2, TNG. This is a rocky season, and I think she gives the show a grounding that it might not have had otherwise, because suddenly there's a calm, a sort of a tranquility to this character, and I love every time we go to 10 Ford and spend time with her, and I love that, you know, she's showing up in the movies. This character's journey is fascinating. You could have made her a regular week to week, and no one would have blinked. She would have felt like she belonged on that ship.
Well, I think the biggest argument, though, is like, Cam, if she was slotted in at number 3, I don't think either one of us would have blinked. Like, she just feels so much of a part of that TNG crew. I'm genuinely interested in what she's going to bring to the table when it comes to Picard season 2, and she's listening to Gollum Picard. I want to know what that relationship's going to be like moving forward.
I'm not even going to try to predict what the writers of Picard could have in store for me.
Yeah. Cam, I don't know if the our next picks are inevitable, but we'll get them out of the way. Number three for me, one of the best all-time antagonists from all of Star Trek. I cannot believe they never gave him a film role. One Q. This is just one of the most iconic characters. Is he a villain? Well, it's at times. Is he an ally? At times. Is he a jester? He's very much a low-key. Kim, if we had, say, Star Trek First Contact followed up with yet another Q story, do you think that we could have gotten a lot more momentum for the TNG film franchise moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If they had put Q in Star Trek Insurrection, it would have been a bigger hit. And that's something, like, I just don't know why they don't continue to exploit Q, because there's so much potential there. And I know John DeLancey's always kind of had the attitude of, like, look, you know, like, let's give Q good material. And I think he's a character that the writers are going to step up for. And I think you could easily find interesting dynamics for him on Picard, Lower Decks. I think you could even make an argument to work him into something like Strange New Worlds, and it would probably work.
Well, no, it won't, because then my Facebook feed will be flooded with people saying, it's Trelane! Trelane is from the Q Continuum, people!
Okay, we know that the Kurtzman group kind of like to go a little fan-wanky from time to time. Is that something they're going to tackle?
I don't want them to. I really don't. My suspicion is they won't, just because it might get extra convoluted. Just a little, just a step too far.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I could see them doing it, but I could also see them leaving it on or off the table, I should say. But we'll see. Okay, my number two, and this is the tough part because I'm basically crowning the winner. I think number two, Gul Dukat. Greatest villain in the history of Star Trek. We've had issues with maybe how season 7 worked out. You know, you get that episode Waltz, which is so, so perfect. And then you get magical books and a conversion to, you know, looking like a Bajoran. Maybe not as satisfying. But the journey this character goes on, you know, 1 second, you hate this guy. You can't stand him. Next thing you know, he's flying a bird of prey. He's saving the day. And you're like, go to God, go to God. That's what I love about the show, is that, you know, through Mark Alimo's performance, through the writing, Gul Dukat is never anything less than transfixing.
The only thing going against him, and I totally agree with giving him the number two spot, though, it's like the way that the character, I'd say, more or less kind of fizzled out. Like, he peaked with season 6 Waltz, which was like episode 10 or 11 at that point. And once he gets involved with the Pal-Wraiths, I get what they were going for from a storytelling level. I just don't think they executed on it in a very interesting way.
Yeah, and I remember there's the moment too where he like loses his vision, right? And Kai Winn like sends him out to go live basically among the poor or the homeless or what have you. And I almost thought like that was a grimmer fate for Dukat than what we got, which was like very Indiana Jones.
So, okay, I don't know. I maybe I'm surprising people with this, but number one, Deep Space Nine character played by an actor that's all the fans adore. Is he an antagonist? Is he an ally? We don't quite know. This person definitely had a full arc, but Liquidator Brunt, you are the number one recurring character from all of Star Trek. Liquidator Brunt, Cam, don't at me, people.
I knew it. You see, I knew this all along. Most predictable podcast episode we could have done.
I'm joking, folks. As much as I like Jeffrey Combs' performance as Liquidator Brunt, he did not make my top 47 list at this point, but maybe I'll use my veto power. I'm going with one Elam Garrick, plain and simple as that. Cam, this character starts off as the lunchtime mate of Bashir. We never really know his loyalties. The more we find out of about him, what he's capable of, the scarier he kind of seems, but also the more compelled we are to follow his journey. I think he hits his peak with, of course, In the Pale Moonlight. But here's his journey. He's a man in exile. He ends up back on his home planet where he wanted to be all along, and his home planet is devastated. It is not what he remembered. and he decides to stay. I think Garrick is just the most fantastic character. You have Andrew J. Robinson playing it, and I think the writers, there's a reason why the writers wanted to keep going back to him, and I think it has to do a lot with what the actor brought to that role.
There's some characters, you can almost feel the smoke coming off the pen from the writers. Like, you could tell that they loved writing them. I think Q is a character like that, and I think Garrick is a character like that, where if you give that dialogue to Andy Robinson, he's going to hit it out of the park. And Garrick was, in a show that already had a fascinating Cardassian in Gul Dukat, it's actually really admirable. They created, you know, a couple other fascinating Cardassians. They didn't stick to kind of the one member of an alien species at a time kind of thing, which some of the other Star Trek shows did. They found, both with Damar and Gul Dukat, other fascinating Cardassians. And the fact that Garrick lands at number one just shows that there was a magic to that character, because when you're going up against those other two, that's pretty tough competition.
So, Cam, we each have the power to veto two picks. We can send them off the list, insert somebody else, move them down, move somebody else up. Going through the list as it stands, are there any picks that just jump out to you as completely egregious, somebody that you think deserves to be there over somebody else at this point?
Yeah, there's, well, let's start with, I think Seska being left off is a little bit of a disservice. The arc with Seska was a little messy, but I have a hard time arguing for Seska being left off in favor of Lursa and Baytor, honestly.
Okay. You are targeting one of my picks. How dare you, sir? So, but you know what? She was higher up on my list than Lursa and Baytor. So I guess I can't really fault you for that. The one that I'm looking at here, where I'm just like, ah, boy, how did we not squeeze in the likes of, say, Hugh? Mm. That's kind of a bummer to me. And like, this character brought out like great performances and great moments from both Geordi LaForge and Jean-Luc Picard. Character met his maker, not the best way, but it was delightful to see him. Can I be honest? Like, who are you most compelled to watch, Cam, any given week? Awashikin or Hugh?
Yeah, it's frustrating because I think that Awashikin, there's an energy to that character that I really dig, but they're not writing interesting things for her to do week to week. Whereas, like, Hugh, you've got Iborg, you've got the Descent arc, and then you've got his appearances on Picard, which are among the highlights of Picard. It's tough. It's really tough. Like, had we split up the Romulan housekeepers, I would have maybe bumped one of them. But a Washkin, huh?
Well, I'm using my veto power. I'm just letting you know.
Like, sure.
But yeah. you can use your veto power to put a Washkin back on the list there. Sorry, Garrick.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think that makes sense.
God. I don't know if I'm going to use my final veto, but it really depends on if you're going to use yours, because maybe I'll just take revenge on you. But Cam, is there anything else that just kind of like makes your skin crawl looking on this list and you're like, oh, how could we miss that person?
I guess there is one character, and maybe this is more of a conversation about whether they belong on the list or not. Because I think you could argue they are iconic, but do they belong maybe in the lower sections of the list? And that is Harry Mudd. Again, the first couple appearances on, you know, TOS haven't aged great. His animated episode is a little fun, also hasn't aged great. But then the appearances we get on the Discovery, you know, both in his episodes as well as the short trek, are super strong stuff. So, like, I think Harry Mudd has become actually very compelling in recent iterations, especially. And it's like, is that enough to justify bumping off, like, one of the most compelling characters in the history of Star Trek, Vedic Barayal?
We've gotten too much mileage out of Barayal.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I could justify that. I find Harry Mudd so much more problematic than Barayal, who all he wants to do is garden.
Yeah, because I don't know that I would bump off Daniels in favor of Harry Mudd.
I wouldn't personally.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the bottom ranked people, right? Because we've got like Baral, we have you know, Seska, we've got like, yeah, like I don't know that I would bump. You've got a Washington now bumped off, but boy, and then you've got the you know, Picard's helpers. Yeah, like the Harry Mudd one's complicated. Maybe Harry Mudd we leave off the board, but he's a character that, if we get more of him on Strange New Worlds, we could grow a little more fondness for him. It's just at this point, a lot of baggage there. And when I look at the ones, even at the bottom, because, you know, when we did ranking the main characters, some of the ones at the bottom were pretty poorly written characters. Not a lot there. Versus here, I feel like even at the bottom, you know, Vedic Baral, we have really richly well-written characters.
Okay, well, if you're not going to use your final veto power, I won't use my final veto power either. But Cam, I need to ask you this. I was convinced you were going to put this one character on the list here and that I would have to use my veto power. Why no Ellen Landry as one of the best 47 Star Trek characters of all time?
I am glad you asked, because I knew you would ask me about this one. Landry, I think we all know, hashtag Fandry forever. The reason I was able to leave Landry off is because the question is, I don't know, which Landry? Are we talking about the main Landry who showed up in episodes 3 and 4 of Discovery? Or are we talking about Mirror Universe Landry? So the fact that, you know, you kind of split them and they are, in my eyes, two different characters made things a little more complicated.
It's just hilarious, though, because clearly she was written in the Prime Universe as somebody who, like, jumped over from the Mirror Universe, but the writers had not figured out at the time that that was not the case. And so it was just, it was a very bizarrely written character in both universes.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Were there any other ones that you know, couldn't justify putting on the list that, but you felt kind of bad for? Like, I felt kind of bad for Major Hayes from Enterprise, for example.
Yeah, and look, maybe not my favorite character, but the Traveler is iconic. I would also say that Tora Ziyal, like, she actually played, like, a significant part in the journey, but is she the most compelling character? And I was always kind of fond of seeing Joe Carey whenever he did infrequently pop up on Voyager.
Yeah, and Tora Ziyal, very important character on DS9, but I think the fact it's played by, like, 4 different actors really muddies the waters on old Tora Ziyal there.
She certainly did not get the Andrew J. Robinson treatment.
So everyone who wants to see the list can go over to the blog. It'll be in the show notes. We'll have a link to it and everything with the final list in case those of you keeping track at home are a little confused. So check that out. But I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next time?
We are jumping forward and ranking all of the seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation. We did that a few weeks ago with the early seasons of Star Trek. Cam, I am loving this series that we are putting together over the next, you know, 6 months. And this will be the next one that is ahead of us. And I'm super pumped.
Yeah, maybe a little weird when we're doing ranking the Short Trek seasons. But right now... right now we are in the thick of it, and TNG is one I think people are gonna have strong opinions on.
How do we rank the Short Trek? Like, there's only 2. Yes, so it'll be a debate between us. It'll be and it will be a full hour-long episode as per usual.
2-part episode, actually.
Okay,
so you can of course find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Vic Fontaine Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's REPORTON, N as in Nielsen, just barely made the list.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.